This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
More than one-third of all American adults use TikTok. That's according to data from Pew Research Center published in January. Scroll through it, and you'll see everything from small business advertisements to discussions about economics and foreign policy, and of course, viral dance trends.
I'm a savage, classy, bougie, ratchet.
No two countries that both have a McDonald's have ever fought a war against each other. Not because of Big Macs, but globalization.
Good morning. It's been a crazy week, but if you thought we were going to stop talking about Palestine, you were sadly mistaken.
I'm confused by this whole Israel-Palestine situation. Well, it's actually very simple.
This ain't Texas. Ain't no hold'em. Hey. They are caught down.
But some U.S. lawmakers are concerned that TikTok poses both a national security threat and raises issues about privacy because who owns it? The Beijing-based company ByteDance.
TikTok is a threat to national security, which is why we are trying to force TikTok to separate from ByteDance and by extension from the Chinese Communist Party.
That was Wisconsin Republican Mike Gallagher speaking to CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday. Last week, he co-sponsored a bipartisan bill that overwhelmingly passed the House in a 352-65 vote. It calls for TikTok to divest from its China-based parent company in 6 months or be banned on all U.S. devices. The bill now faces an uncertain future in the Senate, but President Biden says he will sign the bill into law if it passes. So what's the future of TikTok in the U.S.? Is the app a threat to our national security, or is a potential ban a threat to our First Amendment rights? I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A Podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. We'll be back after this short break. Stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Let's get into the conversation. Joining us from San Francisco is Emily Baker White. She's a senior writer who covers technology at Forbes. She also broke the story about Project Texas, TikTok's billion-dollar plan to stay in the U.S. in 2022. Emily, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us is Jen Golbeck, a professor in the College of Information Studies at the University of Maryland. She researches social networks, social media, and privacy. Professor Golbeck, welcome back to 1A.
Glad to be here.
Emily, just in broad strokes, give us more information about this bipartisan bill that passed in the House and what it requires of TikTok.
Yeah, so proponents of the bill will tell you that this is not a ban bill. This is a divestment bill. But the delta between those two things may actually be pretty small. So the bill says that ByteDance must sell its U.S. part of TikTok to another company within 180 days or face a ban of TikTok in the United States. The problem with that is TikTok is an extremely expensive asset, so there aren't that many buyers who could buy TikTok. Perhaps more importantly, the Chinese government might also be able to block a sale of the recommendations algorithm that underlies TikTok. And they have indicated that they may well seek to impose such a block if a sale does try to go forward.
And when you say this is an incredibly expensive asset, just give us some idea about the possible price tag.
Millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars. And many of the companies that we might think could buy this app are companies that have had antitrust problems in the U.S. Meta, Google, these are companies that are not trying to acquire potential competitors because they have already they're already sort of on the edge of what we consider monopolistic.
So as you said, the bill's supporters say this is about national security. What has TikTok or parent company ByteDance done that concerns American lawmakers?
So one of the most concerning things that they have done is a story that I broke last year where they actually use the TikTok app to surveil journalists, including me, in order to try to figure out who was sourcing us. And so I heard from a source inside the company that the company had planned to pull my TikTok data and look at my location via my IP address and then compare that to the location data of their own employees, which they also have access to through their IP addresses. And the idea was if I and a TikTok or ByteDance employee was popping up on the same IP address at a cafe or a library or a park or something, that might be an indication that they were leaking to me. And some of the people who got access to this data were based in China, which sort of raised concerns that that same tactic could be used to identify and sort of surveil and monitor the locations of other people, including potentially people in the military or people of, you know, political significance or Chinese dissidents, that kind of thing.
Well, we did invite TikTok to join this conversation. They declined our request, but sent us this statement, quote, "This process was secret and the bill was jammed through for one reason. It's a ban. We are hopeful that the Senate will consider the facts, listen to their constituents, and realize the impact on the economy, 7 million small businesses, and the 170 million Americans who use our service," end quote. I mean, Professor Goldbeck, zoom out a little bit. What data is TikTok able to collect from its users, and how does it use that information?
So we don't know exactly what data, but we do know from lots of other social media companies and, you know, things that we've seen that it's a lot. As Emily said, really fine-grained location data. And I'll say this applies generally to all social media apps that you have installed. Even if you turn off location settings, we can find your location from your Wi-Fi signal, from cell towers, from Bluetooth. Your location can be tracked really fine-grainedly, no matter what your settings are. Potentially, they can turn on the front-facing camera and gauge your emotional response to the videos that you're seeing. Really fine-grained measurements of as you're swiping through from one video to the next, how long you look at it. Even if you keep scrolling, do you slow down and like scroll not as fast from some? And then the obvious things like, what are you liking? What are you clicking on? What's the content of those things? And that's what feeds the recommendation algorithm. But the data collection from any social platform goes much, much deeper than that.
And so when we think about social media, one of the things we've talked about before is this assumption that these companies are going to have access to a certain amount of information about us as users. So how much of the current debate that's happening is about not the fact that this data is being collected, but who has access to it, in that this is a company that's owned by China. Professor Goldbeck?
I think that's really the whole issue at this point. I think there are and should be huge concerns about the fact that any platforms can collect this much data, and that there's, in fact, a national security threat from the fact that any social platforms can collect all of this data. That's a conversation that we need to be having much more loudly. But instead, what we're really seeing is the China-based focus of this. And I don't want to like misstate this. I think that's a real concern. I think there are real problems that there is, you know, foreign adversary on the other side of this that may have intentions there. But I think the problems are much bigger than just the China side. And that's really what this bill focuses on, the China element.
Emily, I could see you nodding as Professor Goldbeck was speaking. Go ahead.
No, I agree with that 1,000%. A lot of the things that we talk about on TikTok and we talk about data collection, we also talk about the influence that this platform has over what information we see. Those are issues that pertain to many other apps as well. Your Facebook, your Instagram, your YouTube, your Snapchat, right? Both on the data collection side and on the sort of how are these platforms shaping civic discourse, we should be asking those questions about all the platforms. I do think there's something unique about the TikTok conversation because it has to do with the power that ByteDance has over TikTok and then the power that the Chinese government has over ByteDance. And I guess I think this bill is really targeted toward that question. And there are a bunch of other questions that I don't think it gets into that like Professor Goldbeck said, really, we should be having about all of these companies.
Well, this isn't the first time TikTok has faced challenges due to security concerns. Emily, what was Project Texas?
So I'm going to take you all the way back to 2020 when former President Donald Trump decided that there was an urgent national security threat that needed to be addressed. And the best way to do that was to ban TikTok. So former President Trump tried to ban TikTok via executive order. That didn't go so well in the courts. And then he lost election. So after that, TikTok and the U.S. government, an interagency panel called the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, or CFIUS, began seriously negotiating a potential national security agreement. And the hope was that this contract that would be signed between TikTok and the government would address the national security concerns at issue here, but not require a ban or even a divestment. And what they were trying to do is sort of separate the issue of ownership and control. And so ByteDance would continue to own TikTok, but there would be a U.S. spinoff of TikTok that would be the only people who would have access to private U.S. user data. And that would be sort of tightly controlled. I actually was able to see a draft of this agreement. It was really expansive, and it would have given the government power that it doesn't have over any other social media apps. Things like veto power over content moderation rule changes, the right to inspect records at any time. Under this draft agreement, even some like TikTok US executives would owe a fiduciary duty to the national security of the United States as defined by the executive branch, which, assume a second Trump presidency, could get really weird. So even when we were in this sort of negotiation phase, we were starting to talk about government power over social media beyond anything we'd ever seen before. But Project Texas was this sort of sequestration effort, right? Project Texas didn't satisfy the government. And so this draft agreement that they had worked on for many years didn't work. It didn't go anywhere. And the government said, yeah, we're not satisfied. You're going to have to, ByteDance is going to have to divest from TikTok. And the government said that about almost a year ago, about 10 months ago. And then the conversation sort of stalled. And now we're seeing this effort come back on the legislative side.
Professor Goldbeck, how does TikTok compare to other apps in regard to the amount of information it collects about users?
Again, it's a little uncertain because every platform keeps it pretty secret. But we can tell from the quality of the recommendations on TikTok, they really can suck you in. It's very, very good at feeding you one video after another that's really engaging. And the only way that you can do that is if you have a ton of information about the people that you're sending the videos to. I build these algorithms, and the more we know about people and their tastes, that's how you get that accuracy. So clearly, they have a ton of data. And, you know, like I said before, from every platform, and TikTok is included in this, it gets so much deeper than we think. I think we have this perception that there's a reasonable amount of data that they would collect. Of course, they know what I click on and like, but it just goes so much further than that on every platform. And that ends up feeding these algorithms.
Well, with this concern around national security, Emily, what do we know about the relationship between the Chinese government and ByteDance, and how much influence there may be there?
So ByteDance is a Chinese company. It was founded in Beijing. It sort of grew up, and TikTok is not ByteDance's only app by any stretch of the imagination. ByteDance is known in Asia as an app factory. It's sort of like a Google, right? It's got its hands on all sorts of apps. And just by dint of being a China-based company, ByteDance is subject to Chinese law. And there's a particular law in 2017 that a lot of lawmakers are worried about that essentially requires private companies to collect data on the government's behalf and turn it over to the Chinese government and not tell anybody they did if the government wants them to do that. And so that is one of the laws that folks are sort of most alarmed about, is that ByteDance could be required to do this, or five random ByteDance employees could be required to do this by the Chinese government. They may not want to do it. It may not be something that is in the company's interest. Doesn't matter, because if the Chinese government shows up at your door and says you got to turn over the data, if you have access to the data, you're going to have to turn over the data. There are no warrants. There's no due process. You just got to do it.
Let's head to our inbox. Rodney emails, this is a no-brainer. China is a communist country. The fact that it has apps and information on a third of the U.S. is a security crisis. It has nothing to do with what is on the app or how it is used for small business. And Beth in Chicago emails, my company last year issued a policy that you are not allowed to have any apps tied to your work account on your phone if you have TikTok. So many people had to delete either TikTok from their phones or delete their work email off their phone. Now, 39 states have already banned TikTok from government devices. Montana was the first state to pass an outright ban, although that was blocked in November by a federal judge before it could go into effect. Professor Golbeck, what legal challenges could this bill face if it is signed into law?
I think there's a real concern about the fact that this is a law about one particular app. And I agree that there are specific concerns because of the China connection here. But if you read that bill, it's like a TikTok bill. And that doesn't feel like something that we normally do here. And this harkens back, as Emily mentioned, to President Trump's attempt to, by executive order, ban TikTok, which didn't go very well. So there's First Amendment concerns. Can you have a company that's operating in the U.S. and the government just tell that one particular company what to do? That seems to be the main legal threat that I'm hearing people talk about right now. But I think there are additional concerns about, you know, what is this going to carry for other social media companies or other Chinese-owned companies that aren't necessarily ByteDance, but that may have similar national security concerns.
And so while this is being hashed out at the federal level, Emily, what are state governments doing and individual companies doing if they have concerns about protecting either privacy data or IP?
Yeah, so there have been some state government efforts to ban TikTok. There was notably one in Montana. And there, I think, you have a problem where our state government's really in the best position to assess risk to national security and to act unilaterally on a national security basis. So I think that's a problem with what Montana tried to do. To go back to the point about sort of targeting TikTok, the idea that it could constitute a bill of attainder or, you know, a sort of revocation of TikTok's right to process, to be tried if they are being accused of doing something wrong, could also be a potential issue. But I think at its root, you know, a lot of governments have banned TikTok on state devices. The federal government has also banned employees from having TikTok on their own devices, which indicates some level of alarm on their part, too.
Okay, let's head to a quick break. Still ahead, Khalil Green is the Emmy-nominated Gen Z historian. His TikToks have amassed millions of views. We hear his perspective on the recent House bill in just a moment.
This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Now more than ever, your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, all tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the strength and stability of a top 10 commercial bank, their dedicated experts work with you to build lasting success. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial. A member FDIC.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Amgen, a biotechnology pioneer leading the fight against the world's toughest diseases such as cancer, heart disease, asthma, and osteoporosis. In a new era of human health, Amgen continues to accelerate the pace of change, operating sustainably and drawing upon deep knowledge of science to push beyond what's known today. With each decade, they reliably deliver powerful new therapies to patients. Learn more at Amgen.com.
Let's get back to the conversation by adding another voice. Joining us now is Khalil Green. Khalil is a 2-time Emmy-nominated digital educator. He has a well-known TikTok account, Gen Z Historian. Khalil, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
So how did you first start using TikTok?
I first started using TikTok back in 2021, shortly after the protests that followed the murder of George Floyd. And I got onto TikTok because I saw it as a space for activism, for organizing, and for education. And that's how I've used TikTok ever since. I have a platform where I educate people about American history, specifically the stories from American history that are not commonly taught in school, but I think are necessary for understanding the social context of the United States today.
And did you find that your experience on TikTok was different than your experience on other social media sites, like Twitter, for instance?
Definitely. With TikTok, the ability to reach people is heightened to a level that I've never seen before. I posted my first TikTok at around noon on Martin Luther King Jr. Day 2021. And within 3 hours, there were 1.3 million views on that first video that I made. And that sort of reach is something that you really can't get elsewhere. And now other platforms have tried to mimic the TikTok algorithm, but the ability to disseminate and democratize information sharing was something that was very unique to TikTok when I got onto it.
So what was your reaction to the bill passed by the House?
I was very disappointed in it. I've heard of TikTok bans before, but it became a sort of boy who cries wolf situation where you hear about it in the news, it kind of dies down after a while. But seeing the momentum around this TikTok ban raised a lot of questions, both from me and also the community of creators and users on TikTok. And I think it really heightens this sort of distrust that so many young people and people in general have with the government because of how this bill was pushed through, because of the concerns on what this bill is actually meant to do, and because of just generally the lack of information that's being shared with the public about why they feel such a high need to ban TikTok right now.
So the bill itself is pushing the company to divest from ByteDance, to basically separate the company from ownership. As it's connected to the Chinese government. And you're somebody who grew up in the digital age. And so how do you think about your privacy rights and how much data any social media company has about you?
Well, there's two things I definitely want to address. The first is that even though the bill has been framed or even written in a way that makes it seem like the primary goal is the divestiture of TikTok from ByteDance, many experts and ByteDance itself have called this bill a de facto TikTok ban. In fact, some of the Congress people who pushed for the bill have called it a ban in the press release. And I think that there's a general understanding that the ban is a primary goal for many of the people who are pushing this.
And we should say this is because of the difficulty of selling the company within 6 months.
Because of the difficulty of selling the company within 6 months because of laws with like exporting different businesses in China and just the general position of the Chinese government. But to answer the other question that you had, when it comes to data concerns, I mean, growing up, like you said, we've used all these social media apps, we've given up our data freely. And in my opinion, and the opinion of many other people, although it's not as big of a concern for us as it is for our elders, I think at the end of the day, if there was a way to address this problem, it would be sweeping data legislation. It wouldn't be something that singles out TikTok. And I think that singling out of TikTok is really where a lot of the concern comes from.
Do you have any concern personally, though, about this idea that there is a company with strong connections to a foreign government, and the fact that they can collect information about American citizens and what could be done with that information? Is that something of any concern to you at all?
Well, it concerns me when any government can access our data. There's, of course, the current national situation with China being considered an adversary. But throughout American history, there's been numerous times where the United States government itself has become an adversary to its own citizens using the data that it can collect, going back to the Sedition Act of 1918 during World War I that was used against pacifists, going to COINTELPRO, going to Operation Phoenix, going to the Patriot Act, right? So I think when it comes to the idea of governments abusing data and access to it, I think that that's something that we should be concerned about from any government. And when it comes to the Chinese government itself, yes, it is a concern, but it is a concern with the American government as well, which is why we really strongly would push for sweeping data legislation, especially when other companies like Facebook and Twitter have been known to also give up our data to other foreign adversaries.
So what would that legislation look like to your mind? Because what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that for you, this is a problem that goes beyond just TikTok and its handling of data. It's more about how our data in general is handled by social media companies and what protections we have. So what would that legislation look like?
So I believe it was Representative Yvette Clark who proposed legislation during the Senate hearings last year with the CEO of TikTok. But I know that there were certain regulations on just clarity about what data is being used that we don't currently have. Very clarity around opting out of certain aspects of our data being used. That's just not given when there's a huge laundry list of agreements. When you sign up to an app, you have to accept them all. So I think just parsing out what aspects of data we can opt out of, as well as increasing the clarity and communication, are the first two steps. But I'd love to see something proposed outside of this TikTok ban that does a better job of addressing that issue.
I want to read a couple of comments we've gotten from people tuning into the conversation. Oh, emails. I wouldn't say I look to TikTok for irrefutable facts as much as I look to it for an unflinching memory for unflinching memory and uncomfortable views. The idea that China is a bigger threat than our own Congress and State Department is ludicrous. And if this app is banned, I will go on the dark web, which I avoided till now. But Robert in Massachusetts emails, are there any supporters of TikTok who aren't users? The louder they yell about the so-called ban, the more they make the case that TikTok is influencing them. It's telling that they do not rationally engage with the reasons for removing China from ownership. So my first question in regards to these comments we've gotten is, first, if TikTok goes away, what does that mean for you?
As a creator, I've diversified my platform. So I'm on TikTok, but I'm also on Instagram and LinkedIn. And the way that I got started on TikTok was actually criticizing a lot of the trends that I saw that came from the Black community, but that were often co-opted by white TikTok creators that would turbocharge their sales and their popularity. So I have a special interest in TikTok because I use the platform, but I wasn't always a fan of it. And to answer that question of, are there people who are not on TikTok who are against the ban? Well, there's many politicians, but there's also, at the same rate, many advocates for free speech. The ACLU came out and said that they are against the ban because of First Amendment concerns. The Montana ban didn't go through because of a judge who said that it was an encroachment on First Amendment rights. And that's someone who probably, I can assume, is not on TikTok or doesn't have a special interest in TikTok.
You never know.
You never know, of course. I mean, it could be a psyop. But I think at the end of the day, there's a lot of broad coalitions being built around the fight against the encroachment of free speech and like the poorly communicated reasons for this ban that are coming against this TikTok ban who are not just TikTokers. Mm.
And to the judge comment, I was thinking there are many people on TikTok who just scroll. They're not necessarily contributing content. They're just watching cute dog videos and such. So you never really know who's on there. Now, you say you've been shadow banned, which is when a user's posts are blocked or are deliberately hidden by the social media platform and not paid for your content. Are there other ways in which you'd like to see, if it stays around, this app changed or improved?
Oh, absolutely. I'm the biggest advocate for changes of TikTok and the biggest critic of TikTok, at least in circles of creators that I know. I think TikTok doesn't pay creators enough. I think that YouTube is a great example of an ad revenue sharing program that makes the job of being a creator sustainable. I think TikTok does have an issue sometimes with their algorithm censoring content because it's misguided sort of overreach of trying to protect users, but sometimes it just makes mistakes and censors content. And I think also just investing more in creators is something that TikTok has done a lot more since I've joined the platform, but could also do a lot more of in the future. So there are a lot of problems with the platform, but that doesn't equate to the need to ban it.
That's Khalil Green. He's an Emmy-nominated digital educator and the first Black student body president at Yale, and his TikTok account is Gen Z Historian. Khalil, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Let's go back to our voicemail box.
TikTok does have a potential of a security threat with a foreign country like China. More importantly, I think, though, there's a bigger problem with data privacy that our country and our government should work on policies to fix.
Brian in Virginia, thanks for that message. And it echoes a lot of what we've been hearing from our audience. So, Emily, we heard from Khalil there. What have you heard from other creators about the House bill and the potential impact of this legislation?
So I think creators are concerned, but I think a lot of creators like Khalil have diversified, right? And even if they initially got famous on TikTok or grew an audience on TikTok, those audiences aren't just on TikTok. They are also on YouTube and Instagram and wherever else. And so I think a lot of creators in the face of uncertainty are diversifying. And they've been doing this for longer than just the TikTok ban because, you know, any of these companies can change their algorithm at any time and prioritize X topic over Y topic. And if you're a creator who specializes in Y topic, you don't want to be at the whim of one company's algorithmic change. You want to diversify anyway, because that's safer for you and your business.
Now, Professor Golbeck, we also have a very popular TikTok account focused on golden retrievers. From a creator perspective, how are you thinking about ways in which you can protect your personal information?
I have like such mixed feelings about being on all these platforms. My dogs are very famous across like every social media platform, which is weird. It's a weird life. But also, like, I'm a privacy researcher. So part of me wants to delete everything off my phone all the time. And part of me is like participating in this digital society that we're in now requires being engaged there. So I have a lot of mixed feelings. I try to take all the best practices that I can to protect my data. But I think ultimately this is not an individual action solvable problem. This is a problem that we need to solve at a legislative level well beyond TikTok. And I think we're so overdue for those kinds of rules.
Well, that leads us to this question we got from one of you. Does data collection include access to your contact lists? If so, we desperately need regulation on all platforms. Professor Golbeck, is that something these apps have access to?
100%. And in fact, TikTok is the most aggressive about this. So if you deny them access to your contact list, which everybody should do on every app, they should deny access to their contact list, TikTok keeps asking you for it. And the reason for that highlights a really interesting concern, which is every app says they want this so you can find your friends on the app because they find them in your contact list. And while it can do that, why they actually want that is because then they have all the data about everybody in your contact list. So if you had decided you didn't want to be on TikTok, you didn't want them to have your data, if I give them access to my contact list, suddenly they have a bunch of data about you and they have it from every person whose contact list you are in who shares them. And that allows not just TikTok, but any platform to build what Facebook has called a shadow profile of people who aren't on their platform, but that contains all the data they know from them. It's a really concerning practice. Not the only one, but absolutely troubling.
Now, former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, a Trump administration appointee, says he's putting an investor group together to try to buy TikTok. Emily, I mean, what's the likelihood of something like that going forward?
There are a lot of things that would have to go right for Steve Mnuchin for him to actually be able to buy this asset. He would have to be able to put together the investor group. And more importantly, ByteDance would have to decide that they wanted to sell. They would have to decide that they wanted to sell to this group over any other potential bidder. And then the Chinese government would have to let them sell. And those are a bunch of contingencies that we don't know whether they would come to pass. But I think one other thing just on that point is we've heard from a lot of listeners that they're concerned about the Chinese government, but they're also concerned about the U.S. government and the U.S. government having sort of too much control over our data. I'm really sympathetic to concerns that the U.S. government can access our data too easily, but it's not the same thing as the Chinese government being able to access our data. If the Chinese government wants to get data from people, there is no due process. There are no guardrails. And even if the guardrails in the United States are imperfect, they do exist. And so I think we need to draw that distinction when we're talking about these two governments and their potential access to our information on social media.
Professor Golbeck, in just a sentence or two, regardless of whether this bill gets signed into law, what conversations do you hope it started about the way tech companies are regulated in the U.S.?
I hope this kicks off a really rigorous national debate on better regulation for our privacy of our data overall. That's something we really need.
That's Jen Golbeck. She's a professor in the College of Information Studies at the University of Maryland, and Emily Baker White, a senior writer and technology reporter at Forbes. Professor Golbeck, Emily, thank you for speaking with us. Today's producer was Anna Casey. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Macmillan Audio. One of the most thought-provoking books about the Middle East, Thomas L. Friedman's From Beirut to Jerusalem, is now available as an unabridged audiobook featuring a new preface read by the author. Find it wherever audiobooks are sold. Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This election season, you can expect to hear a lot of news, some of it meaningful, much of it not. Give the Up First podcast 15 minutes, sometimes a little less, and we'll help you sort it out, what's going on around the world and at home. 3 stories, 15 minutes, Up First, every day. Listen every morning, wherever you get your podcasts.